we have with us right now two of the most wonderful gentlemen in the world of prog, who burst onto the prog scene a few years ago, and everybody just loves them to pieces. They've just done another amazing set. If you're watching this, you'll have seen it. Wow. AD and Phil from Stuckfish. Welcome,
hello,
guys.
Yes. Hi. It's good to be
was that
here
good
again.
Enough for you?
That was pretty good.
How'd you like coming back 1 year later, right?
Well, we didn't expect it, did we?
I mean, no.
You don't usually get to play 2 years running, but we played the super sub role, and we were pleased to be asked. It was fantastic.
You're good at it, too. Didn't you both Summer's End?
We did, yeah.
So how much notice did you get? You just got to call off Steve one day and send the reasoning.
A week and a half, maybe.
We looked at it and thought, there's no way everybody's going to be available for this. So we did the rounds. Can you do it? Yes, yes. And there was one left. It was Gary, keyboards. Saying, where's Gary? And I'm thinking, he's going to be the only one who can't do it. And he came back, yep, fine for me.
Wow. before he started organising Fusion, Steve had a full head of hair. Look at him now, the poor bloke.
Organising a festival,
he's been through the mill.
So stressful.
Of course, you know, we had Hayley drop out for very understandable reasons at the end of last week. So, poor old Steve, he's had a lot to put. He's done a fantastic job.
He does brilliant.
Anyway, guys, what a set that was.
Thank you.
Third time I've seen you now, and I mean, I would say it gets better and better, but it's been fabulous every time. So how can I say that? It's just amazing. Superb. And your act just comes across as being honed to perfection. But how do you feel it's going yourselves?
Should I answer that?
Go on.
Let me throw in the curveball that says, how about a little rock with your prog? And that's what you brought.
Yeah. Well, when we first brought Calling out, we felt it was sort of rock with prog influences.
Yeah.
But we thought, you know, let's try and lean towards the prog community, because they really appreciate this, you know, this style of music. They really appreciate what you do. It's a smaller audience, or smaller audience, perhaps, than the general rock market, but much more appreciative of what you do, much more interested in what you do,
and much more supportive.
Well,
they're much more in the
band.
Yes. So we brought Calling out, and then when it came to the Watcher, we said, well, in response to the reaction we've had from this album, I think we've got to go a bit proggier.
Yeah.
Can we go a bit proggier? Yeah, we can go proggier, but we still wanted to keep that rocky edge, because this is where the passion is.
And it comes across live.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, no disrespect to the other bands, but when you go and see one of these festivals, it can be quite samey, because they've got the same volume levels, and sometimes there's a lack of dynamics from band to band, although they are brilliant. So we say, right, when we come out, let's have the contrast. Let's bring the contrast to the festival.
And just have a great time.
And just rock a little bit harder than...
So,
pure prog.
On one hand, it's in danger of alienating a few.
Sure.
Prog purists, and that's fine, because we're all different in what we love. But it also makes a few friends of people who have come across from rock, perhaps, and appreciate prog, but still like that hard-edged dynamic. But having said all that again, and that's a common phrase with us, having said that, we decided to bring out Days of Innocence, and we just thought, right, when we start this project, whatever comes out, whatever it is,
if it's good,
it's going on the album.
You don't need to worry about pinching holes and being tagged in a certain genre. If it's good, it's good.
We just decided then, you know, we thought about how we wanted to structure the first two albums, but when it came to this one, it was just like, let's just open ourselves up, and whatever comes through, if it's good enough,
it makes the album.
It goes on the album. So consequently, Days of Innocence is completely different to the other two albums. And then that becomes a dilemma, because you're thinking,
where do you go next?
Yeah.
We've made some friends with these first two albums. Are we going to lose those friends?
Yeah.
Not if they're real friends to your music, and understand that you need to grow.
The odd thing as well, Alan, is certainly at live gigs, a lot of people will buy all three albums.
Yes.
And even on Bandcamp, we didn't go on Bandcamp for ages, but when we got on there, we did the same deal on the digital side, and said, look, if you want all three albums on digital, £25. And a lot of people will just go bang, and I get a message up, Bandcamp purchase, so and so from Norway has bought all three albums on digital. So where, you know, when we get the Days of Innocence, we think anybody who likes that possibly might not like the first album is proving us wrong.
Yes.
It's still proving us wrong.
But the hard part is what to do next.
Yeah.
Because we feel in our little own little world, in our heads, we think we've, between one album and the next, we've raised the bar each time, and we're thinking, what on earth are we going to do now? But we started album four, and we were playing the ideas as we came down today. We set out very early.
You not play a song from that album?
No.
Oh, but you played a new song.
We played a song that we've never played live before.
Which was Carry On.
And it came across beautifully. And if you wanted me to, I could get those people to make my phone go ding, 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 saying, yes, it was. Yeah. Please don't.
Well, the thing about that song is, for some reason, it's second or third most played song on Spotify.
It is, yeah.
And we had no idea why, because it's like an album track.
Yeah.
But it's resonated somehow. So we thought, well, if people are playing it that much, we've got to put it in the set.
Yeah.
So it's in there.
Yeah.
But now we're thinking, what do we do? Well, we set off at about 7 this morning, and then we played the ideas we've got so far on the way down. We're going, yeah. So we've always said we have to really impress ourselves first. Otherwise,
if you don't like what you're doing yourself, then you can't expect
it. Is that not the path to success? I did this one. Ooh, now look, I got this one.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the best yet. What do you do? Okay, we're done. No, you got to keep pushing the envelope.
That's the hard part.
I went to see B.B. King near the end of his life, and I was chatting to B.B. King, and he'd got a new album out. I think it was There's Always One More Time, I think it was.
Okay.
And I said to him, how does the new album stand up against all your decades of back catalogue? He says, it's the best yet.
Yeah.
I think a musician... always...
Get better and better and better and better, and then when you stop, you've reached your peak.
Yeah.
And you're not admitting defeat, you're admitting you accomplished that perfection level that you could achieve.
I think if you keep yourself open to new ideas and work at it. I mean, Days of Innocence was pretty much a lockdown album. Not the subject matter, but I would sit there and force myself to go in and think, right, what can I do? And the music just came out.
And I'm always trying to tell a story.
And you know,
you're right. You're a storyteller.
The odd stick is, if I give it to Phil and he goes, oh, that's good, because I'll only send him stuff that I like personally. It'll not get past me unless I think, this is good. Phil does the same reaction. Then we'll start the new song. Yeah. If he goes, I'm not too sure on that,
it's gone.
Or it gets drastically changed.
But so
I think the end point is, as long as you keep yourself open to new ideas, songs will always come. So I don't think we'll ever plateau. And maybe in terms of what people perceive as your best album, but in terms of new ideas, I feel they will always be there.
What's the songwriting process with you? Is it one does the music, one does the lyrics, or is it
pretty much?
Yeah, and the other guys in the band, that they have sort of input into what's going on as well.
They very much do, and more than ever. Yeah. I mean, Phil is such an interesting bass player. You know, he's so melodic. He's a keyboard player first and foremost, and he's a good keyboard player. And he's brought that melodic thinking to the bass. So whereas, you know, I used to play bass in a heavy metal band, and I can play bass, but I can't think like Phil thinks on the bass. And Gary, we were just saying, there's a track on Calling, The Man That I've Become. And if we're going to rehearse that track, we'll just do it as it is off the album.
Right.
But Gary, at the last rehearsal, he just started playing the intro in a different way, in a classical way. And it was just like, hold on a minute.
It was like a classical piece, and I went, Gary, you've got to do that. You know, if we do it live, you start with a classical theme,
yeah,
and then we'll take it from there.
Because he just...
He's great.
Reinterprets it.
So you're bouncing off each other in the creative process.
Usually I'll do all the music, because I've got Logic Pro and a little studio and everything. But I will do demo bass. So I can play bass, but not as good as Phil. But I will put the idea down so that it makes the demo sound full. And then I'll say to Phil, right, that's my idea.
You do what you like.
With some of the new stuff, I've just not put any bass on at all. Mm. And said, there's a blank slate. Just have fun with that. Mm. And he usually comes up with some...
Do you send each other music files and sort of say, play with this?
So are you phoning, phoning it into each other?
Yeah. And Adam has his own studio. So we can send files to Adam, and he can work the drums out and send the files back to Aid. Now, Adam is so different in the way that he plays, because he will accentuate a cymbal, he'll accentuate a ghost note. He thinks like a musician, not like a drummer, if you see what I mean.
And quite often, he's inspired by the lyrics.
Yeah.
So if you listen to, for example, Days of Innocence, at the end of it, when Phil sings a line, it's a what's that comical line you sing?
Which one do you mean?
When it goes into the end part.
Life is just a masquerade, a blend of all the games we play.
Adam's listened to that, and one of the parts is about fun, I think, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
So on the word fun, Adam just pings the cymbal just as a little fun hit on the drums. So he's listening to the lyrics
and interpreting
and interpret them on the drums.
The lyrics. So we've got...
So they come last.
Yeah, we've got a
band.
Most
bands start and record the drums first.
Yeah.
And then add the instruments on top.
To get the rhythm.
Yeah. We do it the opposite. He's last on the list.
Wow. Okay.
But his timekeeping is that good.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
That by the time I get his finished tracks, I can drop them in the track and they're pretty much bang on timekeeping.
Yeah.
He's a brilliant timekeeper.
Yeah.
Well, that just shows how important that back line is, the bass and the drum. It's kind of like everybody else is out front, but without them, it hurts. Yeah.
Yeah.
How much do you vary for the live gigs from the original recording? You've just said obviously about the classical introduction to that track.
Yeah.
But do you when you're planning what set you're going to do and what songs you're going to do within that set? Do you initially just do it straight as it was recorded, or do you think let's improvise, let's go off on a bit of a tangent here, or let's do it differently, or how do you do it?
It's the odd song. I generally would stick to the recorded platform.
Yeah.
Extended endings.
Quite often,
it's
just because some of the songs are so complicated to play.
Yeah.
If you started to jam.
Yeah.
Like we did Hull, didn't we?
Oh,
Highway
yeah.
to Hull.
Yeah.
And
we started to jam and got lost.
Either me or Phil Morey came in too early on one section of Age of Renewal, and we just had this car crash in the middle of the song.
Yeah.
But we managed to get out of it.
Yeah.
But that was a set template that we stick to.
Yeah.
So if we start the jamming it, God knows where it would end up.
Talking about live gigs, how important is it when you're selecting your set list to decide which one you're going to start with and which one you're going to finish with? Because the starting track is always one that hooks them in, isn't it?
Yes.
And then the end one is generally the audience's favourite, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you vary that? And how does that get decided?
When up until today, we've always opened with Calling. Because those homs at the beginning set the hairs up going on the back of your head, you know, and that just draws you into the story. And this tale starts to unfold, and everybody, you can see that they're buying into the story you're telling them. But after so long, you just think, it's, you know, there's a lot of the same audience going to be here.
Mm.
We're going to have to think of a new way of presenting what we do. And to open with Game Changer today, it was, right, we're going to have fun when we go on today. We're just going to start the way we
want.
With a smile on our faces.
Yeah.
And so instead of trying to get emotion going at that point, we just wanted to get people to feel at home with what we're doing.
Nice.
The other factor, which not many non-musicians wouldn't understand, is often you'll pick an easy one that's to play.
Yeah.
If we opened up with Age of Renewal, we would just
would be this
massive heap on stage by the end of the song.
To get you into the field.
Adam should have a separate room. You've seen Neil Peart with a drum kit, you know, before a gig, and I just thought, that's a bit self-indulgent, but when you realise it's because the songs are so complicated that you need to be
warm
to be able to get some of the fills.
Yeah.
And Adam's the same. He would ideally have his own rehearsal room before we go on.
Yeah.
And today he said, oh God, I haven't even warmed up yet. So he went on cold, literally.
And Game Changer's hard for him.
There's a fill in there that he normally likes to be warmed up. So sometimes you have to pick an easy to play song so that everybody can get rid of your pre-match nerves.
Yes, exactly. Because it's the same with everything,
isn't it?
That comes
into it.
It's the same with everything. And I played a track on my show the other day called Performance Anxiety by the Swan Chorus, who, strangely enough, should have been here. John Wilkinson, our good mate, are there. And I said, you know, everybody who's a performer in any way, whether it's us doing our radio shows or you about to do a live gig, you still get that adrenaline rush and that little tinge of nerves before the start. And I think that's a good thing, actually.
It is good.
Yeah, it keeps you on your toes, doesn't it?
And I think we always walk on that stage thinking, we're going to give everything we've got.
Yeah.
That's the right attitude, absolutely.
Everything we've got, and it doesn't matter what the situation is. I remember the first time we did Prog for Peer, we had something like 15 minutes to set up.
Mm-hmm. And instead of 20 minutes that we were promised.
We were stressed. Up to the eyeballs.
That was Gary's first gig as well, and he had this huge setup that he needed to wire up a certain way, and he didn't have time to do it. And
this is what we were saying yesterday or the day before. We were chatting to the bass player and the drummer with the Emerald Dawn, and I was saying, gigs like the festivals like this, does this make it easier, you know, in terms of you've got a ready-made audience, you don't have to book the venue yourself? And Dave, the bass player, was saying, he said, but it's the one thing I don't like is the very short sound check time. You've got to get in there, you've got a very short time, and if it's not set up quite right, you don't have a chance to put it right.
Did you even get a sound check?
No.
Right. I believe only the headline band.
Yes.
Each night was getting the sound check.
And the sound,
I get it.
But obviously the guys on the desk are doing a good job.
The sound guys are fantastic.
They've had bands all weekend, so they know basically what the levels are going to be.
And the sound has been...
On
last
stage
year,
as well.
It was good. And this year, I think the sound's just as good as last year. The room has great acoustics.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the volumes here have been just spot on, because I've been to so many gigs where it's just too loud, and no matter how good the music is, it's too loud.
Yeah.
You just lose the melody in this wall of sound, don't you?
The other thing is, if I can't hear myself on stage, I can't sing in tune.
Right.
Because you've got to be able to hear yourself to pitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's been a...
That's why they invented that earpiece.
Yeah. I don't like them.
I hate them.
I can't stand them. Because because of the way I react on stage, I've got to feel the band.
Yeah.
And if all I'm doing is listening through earpieces, I can't imagine I'd feel the band.
Yeah.
So I have to hear myself properly, and it's fantastic. I can hear
spot on
crisply everything
that's
I'm singing.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great 2 years in a row I've been here, and I keep telling people I have not been to a better sounding festival or venue, because the acoustics are right, the sound people are good. I met Alan, who did the sound last year. It's not Alan, but the same company.
Yes.
And they do O2 and places like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So
Summer's End was good as well, a great sound.
Yeah.
If you've got good sound, you can relax.
Yeah, you can.
But if you're a great band and you got crappy sound, the whole room is nervous and on edge and can't relax. We only have a couple of minutes left. We'll probably get cut off in probably next 5 or 10 minutes. Let's talk about communication. How can you get a hold of the band?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so website.
Stuckfish.net. Think of catching fish in a net. Stuckfish.net.
And I'm just so everybody knows, John Jowett and his lady,
Alex,
renamed you guys.
Oh, I hope it's clean.
Alex Klee, right. You've been renamed to Sex Pig.
Sex Pig?
Yes, I just want to throw that in.
Sex Pig? That could be a side project.
I'm the sex.
Oh,
way.
Thanks. I'll take the pig any day. I'm a good support actor.
And you've got the videotape to prove that I actually even had the balls to say that.
I want to say something else. We've just sure. signed to White Knight, and their outlet for the music is Claire Lisi in Wales, Claire Lisi
yep.
Music.
Yep.
We're also on Bandcamp, of course. And if you want to message us, we're always available for
Facebook
a conversation.
Facebook is just look for Stuckfish.
Yeah. Stuckfish Band.
I was going to say. I mean, the gentleman setting up on stage his keyboard at the moment, Mr. Reed. You've signed to his label, White Knight. Has that made a big difference to you?
Well, we're still growing together because it's so fresh. It was November.
Yeah.
So White Knight reissued Days of Innocence because we sold them all.
Yeah.
So we needed to press again. And White Knight stepped up and pressed the
okay,
next door.
Okay, so that begs the question, because I do a vinyl show.
Oh,
you
yes.
guys know that. We even talked about last year.
Well,
what's the future look like? Because I want to play your music so bad on my show, but I'm not going to break my format just because I'm like everybody else's show.
He leaves it to me.
Yeah, and I can say, Sean, I want to play Stuckfish. You play it on your show for me, would you? And actually, he would. I know that.
The thing about vinyl is, you've got to convince somebody that they can sell enough.
Right, and so everybody knows, if I only run 100, it costs me a lot more per than 200, than 500, and I've got to pay everything up front.
Yeah.
And then wait for the sales.
A lot of vinyl pressing companies won't press anything less than 300 as well.
Yeah. Right. So
that's, about
so is that a possibility,
size.
Though? Or you still
you'd probably sell maybe 100 and you've got 200 sat in the garage for the next 10 years.
Well, that's
the
question. How many vinyl fans are in your universe?
Yes, that's right. And I still think we need to ask them. I think we need to talk to vinyl fans.
Right.
Yeah.
And get some feedback. Because what I'd like to do as a story so far, I'd like to do the best tracks of all three albums plus a few new songs.
We talked about this, yes.
I think that would be a lovely thing to do.
It would like be a anthology.
Yes.
It's an anthology album.
It's a good title.
And you know where you can get your feedback? I'll bet on your Facebook page.
Well,
I tried because I said, what's your favorite medium to listen to music?
Yes.
And it was specifically questioned to see if anybody did CD, if the
streaming
CD at home, if it was Spotify. Yeah.
Is it
and do
car?
You even listen in stereo?
Yeah.
That's my thing.
One crackpot, I said, what's your favourite form of listening to music? Live. That was one of the
well,
answers.
That's
which is, fair enough.
It's a nice thing
but,
to say.
It is.
The overwhelming majority of people said they listen on CD.
Yeah.
CD. They don't like MP3. And you know why I think it's CD? Because at least there's still some artwork.
Yeah.
There's still some information. Yeah. When they buy your MP3...
It sounds better as well. MP3s are too compressed sonically to get the real sound of the band.
Well, I understand that you can get a FLAC file on Bandcamp, lossless.
You can.
I don't know if it costs more, but that I've heard that,
well,
and I go,
people,
I can accept.
Apparently,
this.
If people buy the CD on Bandcamp, they will automatically get a FLAC digital download for free.
Yeah.
And I would take advantage of that. Absolutely.
You see that increasingly now.
Yeah.
They're offering, CD, MP3 download, FLAC, lossless as well.
Yes.
And it's great that you can do all three on Bandcamp.
Yeah.
You use Spotify as well, you mentioned earlier. Is that really just mainly for promotional purposes? Because you're not going to make any money at all out of that, are you?
Thousands of
a
cent for streams.
Well, we limited as well.
We had this conversation with Rob when we signed to White Knight, and he said, what are you doing putting all your tracks?
Yeah.
because he told me he spoke to Francis Dunnery, who had that album with 100 tracks on it or something.
Yes.
And he had every track available to listen to. And he went, Francis, you need to limit it because people are just going to stream it for nothing. You're not going to sell anything. So,
and he said, they'll stream it and use something like Audacity to record it for themselves.
Yeah, straight back to Bandcamp and blocked half of the albums.
Yeah.
But I rotate them.
Yes.
So if anybody comes back and goes, oh, I can't listen to Days of Innocence. Yeah. If they come back the next month, you might be able to hear that, but now you can't hear Age of Renewal.
A lot of bands are putting like a 30-second sampler of each track as well.
It's hard in prog because that track can go a dozen different places from the beginning to the end.
Yeah.
So a 30-second sampler of a 15-minute track isn't really going to help, is it?
So I've had a few people say, why is your new album only got 3 tracks on it? No, it hasn't got 3 tracks in it. We've just made available 3 tracks.
And I was talking to John Young,
very smart,
from Life Science, and he's you know, he put me pretty much in my place and said, look, music has a value. It needs people to invest in your music. And I, you know, my analogy is, if you walked into a coffee shop and said, let's try your cappuccino, let's try your latte, whatever. Anyway, that's nice, thanks, and walked out without paying, which is basically what they do on Spotify.
Johnny's very, very vocal on this subject, isn't he? And quite rightly so.
That's, you know, it's an attempt for people to go to Bandcamp, listen to, you know, you'll get half of the album, and then they go,
That's worth
Well, if that's good, if that's good, I'm going to buy the CD. And you know, you're trying to get people invested.
It's not exactly a fortune.
What's coming up, schedule wise? You got some shows?
Got a small show in Newcastle coming up on the 30th of March.
Write it down.
At a place called The Little Buildings in Newcastle, in the trendiest part of town. And it's called The Ouseburn, and it's just so cool.
Beautiful.
But, and this little place, it's 50, 60 people max.
Intimate.
Very, very intimate, small little place. But you get that many people in there and it's fantastic.
Yes.
Okay, we're about finished up. Anything else beyond that real fast? You got 2 seconds.
My favourite gig of the year will be in September because we're playing in our hometown, Anik, the Anik Playhouse. That is going to be
awesome.
Fantastic.
Guys, we've got one more interview coming back. We'll see you soon.
Cheers, guys.
should.